Hello friends, and welcome back to another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
It you. How are you today, my friend?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am good. So obviously we're bringing this episode to our friends listening at home a little bit late, but it was, you know, unforeseen circumstances. We had things to do. Sometimes life gets in the way. Sometimes the Women's Prize gets announced after the time that we would like to record, and we have to postpone things a bit.
Such
the Women's
is
Prize shortlist,
will.
not the winner, but the shortlist. Yeah. But we wanted to chat about it, didn't we?
Yeah, as we did a whole episode on the long list, it wouldn't be right not to talk about the shortlist as well.
Not to revisit.
But that, of course, is not going to be the total theme of this episode. That's just going to be, it's like a two for one today.
Exactly. We've rolled two little eps into one. The primary objective of this is to do our book club episode on The Manning Tree Witches by A.K. Blakemore. And we gave you a bit of time to read it. So hopefully some people who are listening will have read it by now. Whereas when we did Night Shift, I feel like we kind of sprung it on people a little bit, did we not?
We certainly did. But we will be avoiding spoilers anyway. So if you haven't read it, don't worry. You can still listen.
Yes.
It just might not be as interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel with a story like this, I just feel like we know roughly what direction things are heading in.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, well, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. I assume we've just been reading this book this week, but if you have anything you'd like to tell me about reading-wise, Alice Slater?
No, I really don't. I've definitely hit like a bit of a wall with reading, and I think that is because we are socializing again.
So
I have
true.
A lot less time, and I have found myself just a lot more tired. So it took me a lot longer to read The Manning Tree Witches than I had expected it to. And that's nothing to do with the book. I just haven't had the concentration span that I've been enjoying for the last few months.
When we had literally nothing else to do.
Yeah, so I have nothing to report. What about you?
No, I was just reading this. I wanted to give a little update on a book I mentioned, maybe last episode or the episode before, that I was reading at the time of... Oh, yeah, I think it was last episode. I said I was reading The Nothing Man by Katherine Ryan Howard, which is a thriller, but I just started it, and I said I would update the listeners on how I felt about it. I loved it. It is literally my favourite thriller I've read in ages. I cannot recommend it enough. I am fuming that it is not more spoken about on my social media timelines. Yeah, you gotta read it. I think you would really like it,
okay.
Alice Slater. I think you would, yeah, you'd really enjoy this.
And what was it again? The Nothing Man by...
Katherine Ryan Howard. She is Irish.
Okay, I'm jazzed. I'm gonna look it up as soon as we finish recording.
It is inspired by I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara.
Oh, fucking hell. Okay.
But it's fiction. Right. Yeah, it bangs. So yeah, that's my little update for people who are looking for a good thriller, a thriller that does not suck. I can vouch for this one.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm excited. I also just want to apologize. When you listen back to this, you may have heard some bullshit happening in the background in my recording studio, which is a blanket in my living room.
I didn't hear anything.
Okay, good, because my husband creeped into the room. And, you know, like, because I have a blanket over my head, but I could fucking sense him.
You just knew
he
was
removed,
there.
He removed an object, possibly his laptop, possibly a book. Then I had him creep out again. So I don't know. It may have picked up. It may not have done.
Well, you know, I didn't hear anything, but I'm happy to know that his presence is felt on this episode. The presence of Alex is with us.
His stealthy little presence.
Much like the devil himself, if you will, which leads us neatly onto our book club book, which is The Manning Tree Witches by A.K. Blakemore.
What did you think of this?
I really liked this.
Me
it's
too.
Very, very much my shit. So in a nutshell, it is set in 1646 in the kind of midst of the English Civil War. And it is about the true events of what happens when a man called Matthew Hopkins arrives in Manningtree and Mistley in Essex and his quest to hunt out the local witches, including the protagonist and her mother and her mother's associates. Would you say that's a fair
so
summary?
Good. Yeah, no, I think that's a brilliant summary. It's so good. I absolutely loved it. It definitely took me a minute to get used to the tone of voice because it has, like, I was trying to describe it the other day. It's written in like a kind of, see, I really struggle to articulate it. It is written in a voice that feels close to what you could imagine a 17th century girl from Manningtree, how she might speak. But it still has this very kind of literary, lyrical quality to it. And it also feels very fresh. It doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel stagnant in its kind of like ye olde tone.
Yeah.
I just loved it. I really loved it.
Something I wasn't necessarily expecting of it is that it is pure historical fiction. It is like, that is what it is. It's about history. It is written in this kind of more old, ye olde tone of voice. It has like one little interjection of the modern world, which is a poem that's printed towards the end, which is from 2019. But apart from that, it's very much like, this is historical fiction. And I was kind of not necessarily expecting that. I don't know what I was expecting, but yeah, I loved it.
I have a little quote to read out to give a flavour of the tone of voice, if I may.
Please, read to us, my friend.
They can imagine the devil there, some great thing in the sky, or as a mist rolling in off the river, gathering the smoke of scullery fires to himself for later use, or as the miasma that hovers over the marshes and flats, bringing the ague, a dark head crowned in slender red leaves of narrow dock, a moth with mouths both front and back, cavorting in the autumn clouds that are like strips of flayed skin. The devil minces and the devil dances. He dances like a girl might, slender-hipped, hair falling wild around her shoulders, inflamed.
Yes. That is very
love
much
that shit.
Yeah, that's
love
very
it.
I feel like that really encapsulates the tone of the book. But I also found that amidst that, it is quite easy to, you have to read every word, but as long as you read every word, it's easy to follow the plot.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It's not impenetrable.
Like, I feel like I specifically, whenever I read something, whether I'm reading it digitally or the physical book, I mark little lines, paragraph sections that I really like. For lots of different reasons, sometimes for the pod, sometimes because it helps with reviewing or even just writing about it on Instagram, or just for the sheer pleasure of having things to return to like refresh my memory of the style of the book. And with this one, I was just jamming so many little notes in, folding over so many corners, because there were so many bits that are like this.
Yeah.
But this is a particularly lyrical, I flagged it because it's a good example of the language, but the whole thing isn't written in this like flight of fancy, you know, like, there are lots of sections which are slightly more grounded in the real world, like what is actually happening within a scene. And that, I feel, is like where the plot unfolds. So it's very easy to follow. It isn't all kind of literary flights of fancy.
Agree.
Would you agree? Yeah.
And I love the plot. I think it's something that is very interesting. It's a time in history, I think, is, yeah, it's a kind of historical moment that I am interested in. I am like into the European witch vibes. It is something I studied at university because I was interested in it. I'm just very into what was going on in the 16th and 17th century and why this was a thing that could happen.
So why was this a thing that could happen?
In England, the kind of distraction of the Civil War left a lot of places a bit distracted and slightly lawless, and then it kind of fell to dudes like this to kind of swoop in and impose some kind of order. That's like one element of it, I think. Yeah, because like a lot of people were away doing Civil War things, and yeah, this was a way of kind of understanding various economic or agricultural tragedies and difficulties that were befalling people.
Interesting. And was it influenced by, because this book is set in like the 1640s, what year was Salem? Because I feel like when we think of witch trials, we always think of Salem first, but of course they had happened before and after. Like, there isn't a particular reason that Salem, why is Salem like the kind of the north of the compass as far as witch trials go?
Yeah, and that was in 1692. So this was like nearly 50 years after what this book is about. So this was something that was going on for a sustained period of time. And it doesn't really feel like anyone ever learned from it for, you know, some time that it was futile and ridiculous. Yeah. I don't know why Salem has become the... Maybe because it happened in America and they are good at mythologizing their history. Who knows?
I feel like there's possibly more to it than that, but it's. I chose not to research Salem for this book because the book is not about Salem.
Yeah.
But it's something that I'm certainly interested in. I also feel like over the last, give or take, few years, 5 years, 4 years, there has been like a sneaking boom in books about witch trials and books about witches.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely been quite a few of them. And I feel like at one point I felt like it was moving towards potential saturation because there were just so many. And when you end up with so many about one subject, it can become quite difficult to get excited about new ones.
Yeah, and to distinguish. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
To distinguish what's good and what's... Yeah, even if you're interested in something, it's like, I don't just want to read about this because I'm personally interested in it. I need a guarantee of quality as well.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was kind of fumbling my way to saying. That you end up not really being able to distinguish the good from the bad, as in terms of writing and quality, because they will start to mirror each other. You know, the covers will start to take on a similar vibe and it can just be quite difficult to pick out what's actually going to be a good read. So I'm glad that I feel like that had kind of started to die down. And then this one has come. It's got a really fresh cover.
Agree.
It's also got like, I just appreciate the fact, and I don't know if this is a silly thing to say, but I just appreciate the fact that it's not being marketed as a feminist book. I feel like the kind of whole witch trial energy has been co-opted quite a lot by whose politics I don't agree with, which has also made it quite kind of, yeah, it's quite, I'm glad that this book hasn't felt, the marketing hasn't felt the need to do that.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of the, maybe that's why this is the first of the kind of witchy book genre that I have actually read, despite it being something I'm kind of interested in, because it feels like either the kind of politics and rhetoric of it either gets appropriated for like bad feminist ends, like, you know, swerf turfism, or like very blandly feminist ends. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Neither of which I'm very interested in, especially not interested in spending my one wild and precious reading life reading.
Yeah. And like, obviously, it's not a thing. It's not important to think about misogyny in terms of like historical context. It's not there. It's not present. But yeah, I think the kind of co-opting of it has made me side eye a lot of books that are about this subject matter. And possibly incorrectly, possibly completely unfairly. Maybe I have like a whole host of reading that I've missed out on, because I am obviously very interested in witches, the witch trials, but also anything a bit spooky. So, you know, you would think that these books would be made for me.
So
maybe
true.
I've really spited myself by not being more open-minded.
Yeah, if our little friends at home would like to advocate for a particular witchy book of recent years, let us know, because we're interested.
And I do have a list. So when in reading this, I was thinking about like what books I'd compare it to. And The Mercies by Kieran Millward Hargrave and The Familiars by Stacey Halls were two books that I thought of that are more recent that have really good press. I haven't read either of them, but they have really good press. So they're two that I would be interested to read. And then I also was thinking about The Crucible, obviously, by Arthur Miller, which is a play about Salem. And yeah, it's hard not to think about that in reading this.
True.
Did you think of any?
Not really, but yeah, I haven't. I mean, obviously I was thinking about The Crucible, but maybe the existence of The Crucible is one of the reasons that Salem has become the premier reference point of witch trials, because that is, you know, a real mammoth piece of culture, you know, English language culture, and that is probably a lot of people's way into thinking about this phenomenon in 16th and 17th century history.
Yeah, and I suppose like The Crucibles is a GCSE text, so it's something that a lot of people in the UK encounter, or it was a GCSE text. I presume it's no longer one, as it's American.
So something that when I have been reading and watching and thinking about The Crucible, something that I have always found really curious and really wanted to like get to the bottom of is the question of like given witches do not exist and given magic does not exist, what was happening? Like, what was the thing that was happening to these people? What was the, like, rational explanation for it? And I feel like something I really enjoyed about the Manning Tree Witches was it didn't completely answer that question, but it showed me, like, little elements of the story that I had not kind of considered, which was namely, so the main character, Rebecca, has a friend called Judith Moon, and one kind of element of the story is how Judith Moon accuses her own mother of being a witch as a kind of diversionary tactic from herself. And I feel like that kind of explained something to me about, like, how this could have spread so much and so quickly if there was this kind of hint that this was something that was on the horizon. A smart thing to do would be to get your accusation in first. And then another kind of element was, there's a bit where Rebecca says that she kind of wishes that the devil had attacked her so that she could know that she was, like, a good Christian girl. That bit really kind of struck me as well, that, like, for people that really did believe in this stuff, the fact that they had not been, you know, quote unquote, like, attacked by the devil was maybe proof that they were bad. I don't know, I just feel like there was some stuff in it that I was like, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense to me now.
Yeah, because it snowballs, doesn't it? And, like, the accusations kind of bubble up from nowhere. And they kind of bubble up. It starts with an altercation. It starts with a row because a starving woman who's unsightly in many different ways, so to speak, knocks on the door of a family and requests a piece of bread. And, like, they end up having a fight. And that's kind of where it, that's like the kind of catalyst for everything that happens. And it's just, it's nothing. It's a row. It's a starving woman asking for food. It's a row over a piece of bread. And, like, I think with some stories of, like, witch trials and also, like, demonic possession from history, we can look back and recognise, like, oh, this person potentially was, for example, epileptic. You know, there are things that we can read between the lines now and understand what physical thing was going on that was being misunderstood. But also, I mean, in this book, it is not that. It is simply just that they are looking for witches, and if you're looking for something, you'll find it. And then there's this brilliantly ironic line later on in the book about grabbing a scrap of clothing or hair from a hanged witch is something that's very, people covet because they can use it in charms. They can use it in charms.
Yeah.
So there's this, like, this kind of nod to the fact that actually these, like, superstitions were everywhere. Everyone did these kind of charms and tricks to try and live a good, safe life and to protect their family, because times were very uncertain and precarious. And I feel like no matter how godly you are and no matter how deeply religious people are, like, prayer isn't always enough. Like, there's these, like, kind of old wives' tales and superstitions that people would live by, and obviously we still have echoes of that today, like people knock wood or breaking up eggshells. All of that is kind of witchy too, right? But there's the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it, and obviously these women were arbitrarily accused of doing it the wrong way
or being the wrong kind of women.
Yeah,
like being kind of undesirable or old or widowed or having kind of, yeah, no, not much family or...
Yeah, they all of them are kind of ostracized in one way or another. Maybe ostracized isn't even the right word, though, because as a community, like, the old woman at the beginning who is hungry, like, another family take her in, they know her, she's known to the community. And it's like, the family that say no, they're not rich people either. Like, they are also starving and they have children and a pregnant woman in the home. Like, they can't spare it. So yeah, ostracized isn't the right word, because as a community, they exist together in harmony. It's only when the outsider comes fucking poking around asking questions that they start turning on one another, because they know where it can lead to.
Yeah, and that's what I find really interesting is, like, who benefits from this in the end? Like, what is the benefit to even, like, the Matthew Hopkins of the world? Like, because he's, you know, the one that's benefiting, I guess, but I still don't really understand how. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the way in which he benefits directly is that he is proving himself to be effective. He's a very effective witch finder if he's going around hanging witches. Like,
and there is some mention of like financial compensation to him. But yeah, I'm just like, it's not kind of to anyone's benefit in the community, really.
Yeah, because there wasn't a problem. Like, that's the other thing with the Manning Tree witches. It's not like the villagers were reporting a problem, like, of spoiled crops or animals turning up dead. Like, there was nothing concrete. I don't understand why he turned up to begin with. And I will just say that, obviously, this may well be in the text, but the nature of reading, like, books that are very rich in that literary sense is that sometimes you miss a few details. So, you know, apologies if that's actually there in plain English and I just missed it. But, like, what brings him to Manning Tree?
In the first place, yeah.
Just bad fucking luck.
Yeah. And it could have been anywhere, I guess. Like, it's not like there was a particular problem with that part of the world. If he turned up in some other town, I'm sure the book would have been called, you know, The Something Else Witches.
The Ilford Witches.
Exactly. But yeah. I really definitely kind of appreciated the fact that, like, A.K. Blakemore is clearly very knowledgeable and committed to this as a subject matter, and it's really like well researched and very kind of dense, and yeah, I found it a real kind of pleasure and a privilege to read.
And you know what, you can tell that the author, you can tell that the author is a poet, you know, like the quality of language on a line level is just completely stunning, and I really really appreciated it for that.
Like, agree.
The number one thing that I want in a book, I want something compelling. I want to be compelled to read right to the end, and I want on a line level to really enjoy it.
Yeah, because it is quite kind of confronting when you start reading it and you're like, oh, okay, like this is the vibe, like I'm really gonna have to pay attention to this, but it is definitely worth it. I don't think there's like any, I'm very happy to have read this. I think if you're up for reading the story and you know that it has quite a like dense literary style and you will have to kind of read it properly, I would have no regrets.
Thing is though, I feel like part of the reason why it feels like a dense literary style is because it's written in ye olde back in the day lingo. And as a, like personally as a reader over the last year, I probably haven't read a single other historical fiction book. So I feel like, you know, like I don't want to make it sound like it's more difficult or like more challenging than it is. I think it just really took me a few beats to get back into the swing of reading something which is not just written in a contemporary voice.
True.
That's okay. Okay. Do you have any final thoughts on The Manning Tree Witches?
I don't think so. I just really enjoyed it, and it's not what I was expecting. It is pure historical fiction in terms of the content, but has this really like beautiful style. I find that, you know, as I said, I find that period really interesting, so on that basis I enjoyed it. But I just think, yeah, if you want something slightly different to the kind of contemporary dark lady books that we often enjoy on this pod, I think this fits right in, even though it is historical.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Good.
All right, moving on
from witches to women's.
Let's do the shortlist.
So, the reason that we delayed this episode, as I said, is because the shortlist of the Women's Prize was announced on the evening of the day that we normally record. So, we just pushed it all back a bit. And so, we are coming to you now on Monday. So, maybe you will have heard the shortlist by now. But if you have not, Alice, would you like to read it to us?
Okay, so the shortlist is as follows. Six books down from 16. We've got The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. We have Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. We have Unsettled Ground by Claire Fuller. Transcendent Kingdom by Yagi Assi. How the One-Armed Sister Sweeps Her House by Sherry Jones. And No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood.
So, the good is that this is like a 50%... Black lady writer shortlist. That is good.
Very cool. Very happy with that.
What are we unhappy with?
Tori Peters.
Where is she, bitch?
I'm so disappointed that Tori Peters isn't on there. I really thought that she would be. I feel like her book deserves to be there. It's one of the best books that I've read this year. And I feel like one of the most beloved books that's been read this year. I feel like everyone who's read it has really loved it.
Yeah, and just so, anecdotally, you know, knowing what the, you know, the response was to her being on the long list and how that completely, you know, through the goodwill and good intentions of most readers of contemporary women's fiction, that like popped off in a way that it probably wouldn't have done had it not been longlisted. I just feel like there is such a like story there about what people want from women's fiction, how people are feeling right now. You know, that kind of, you could say it's as a result of being on the long list, but I think it was as a result of like horrible transphobes trying to, you know, kick up fuss. That went to number 5 in the hardback bestsellers.
Yeah, because you know what? People were doing something that I really fucking hate and taking sections of the book out of context and then holding them up as examples as to why the book was morally corrupt. And like, that's not how like fucking fiction works. You can't just take something out of context and then like blast it as being like indicative of the author's personal like morals or how they conduct themselves or how they believe the world works. Like, you can't fucking do that. It's not fair. And that, I think, is one of the things that really like propelled the book online, was people arguing over whether or not the book is acceptable, the book is morally right, the content is reflective of like every trans person and how every trans person moves through the world. And it just, it makes me feel so fucking angry. And yeah, and she was put through that ringer. And I just really felt like, obviously, being longlisted is a massive achievement, but she deserved to win. And so I wanted to see her on the shortlist. I wanted to see the book. I wanted to see it all really be worth it for her.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, in terms of how it's affected sales, I think it has been worth it. But I just, yeah, I don't really necessarily believe that she doesn't deserve to be on this shortlist. I don't really understand, like, the decision-making process that has led to her being left off it. I hope it isn't to do with, you know, backlash and bad publicity or whatever. But yeah, I can't, even though I've only read 2 of these 6, I cannot believe that it is not better than at least 1 of the other 4.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've only read 1 of them, so I can't really say that, but okay, the other one that I was really sad not to see was Luster.
Yeah, me too. Luster would
be there. Especially as, like, I feel like Luster is really fresh and exciting. And, again, is another book that has been quite universally lauded by those who've read it. And, you know, I mean, just to pick the one that I think is, like, most similar on the shortlist, like, no one is talking about this, is the other. That's, like, the millennial lady novel on this list, right? Like,
yeah.
And I feel like Luster has, like, you know, I guess, a comparable kind of themes and characters, like, comparable style, maybe. But no one is talking about this, I feel like, has had quite rocky reception.
Yeah, so I feel like it's definitely kind of been more mixed than Luster, which I've seen really, you know, nothing but praise for.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just wonder what would motivate them to choose No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood over Luster by Raven Lalani.
Maybe I will read No One Is Talking About This so I can give my personal authoritative view on the whole situation.
Yeah, I have it now, so maybe I will give it a go. And I'm sure it's good, but I just feel like, yeah, I don't know. I feel
yeah,
like,
that's the yeah. thing, I guess, because I trust that all these books are good.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, like, apart from maybe The Dawn French. But I trust that all the others... Oh, and The Turf. But I trust in general that the quality of these books is going to be acceptable, right? Like, it's not really about whether they're good or bad. It's about what they're contributing to the landscape of women's fiction in big old 2020/2021. And I feel like Luster is contributing something really valuable. And I feel like The Transition Baby is contributing something really valuable. And they're books that will be carried for at least the next few years, I think we'll start seeing comparisons made with, like, emerging debuts. They will be checkpoints that people will refer back to, right? Same with The Vanishing Half as well. I'm not convinced that that some of these would be. Like, I'm not convinced that Patricia Lockwood's novel has, like, changed the landscape of women's fiction this year.
I just feel like she's someone that is so set up to be, like, you know, to borrow a phrase from Lena Dunham's Girls, The Voice of a Generation, or A Voice of a Generation. Yeah. I just, yeah, I find there is something a bit like grimacing emoji about the way that that is just accepted. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think because, like, she's a big internet voice and she has given us some of my favourite tweets, like the Jonathan Franzen portobello mushroom on the grill.
And the Paris Review of Books. Yeah. That's a good, like, tweet too.
She's fucking great. And, you know, people loved Priest Daddy.
I for some reason.
Feel like it, yeah, it didn't move me, you know? Like, it didn't stir anything in me. And yeah, I guess I know what you mean about the bit feeling like there's just something a little bit predictable, especially because no one is talking about this is an internet novel, right? Like, it's about... It has elements to it which are about, like, modern society, the internet,
yeah,
smartphone usage, social media, whatever. Like, it's covering that kind of... That's its wheelhouse. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll read it.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a shame that, like, two of the books on the long list that we feel are particularly kind of significant to the current moment in publishing and human history have been ignored, but congrats to the shortlistees, I guess.
Will you read any of the others?
I'm definitely going to do Transcendent Kingdom on audio, I think, because I don't have it and it's in hardback and baby hates hardbacks. I will probably grudgingly give No One Is Talking About This a go because I have a copy now. I'm kind of curious about how the one-armed sister sweeps her house because I've got to be honest, I have not seen or heard a word about it outside of the context of the Women's Prize, and same goes for Unsettled Ground by Claire Fuller. I don't see anyone talking about those two books.
I did see a big flurry of activity around how the one-armed sister sweeps her house when it came out.
Interesting. I don't know how it passed me by.
But then I think because it has a very memorable title, I think that's why it really stuck with me. But, like, I saw quite a few, like, industry people reading it and really enjoying it.
Okay, cool.
And then Unsettled Ground, because Claire Fuller has written, when we recorded this episode, we forgot that we are familiar with this author, of course. Like, well, we know who Claire Fuller is, but we forgot that she wrote Bitter Orange.
We did not forget. That's in the episode.
Is it in the episode?
Yeah, we literally talk about it. I revealed it to you that we have read one of her books. That's how memorable you find this whole thing.
Oh, I'm not smart, man. I'm not smart.
At least one of us is.
I enjoyed Bitter Orange well enough. So, and apparently Our Endless Numbered Days, which is Claire Fuller's other book, apparently that really bangs.
Yeah.
My friend Emily Hatzar said that she loved it. So yeah, I'm going to give all of them a go. Obviously, Piranesi, which you have read, I have not, comes highly recommended.
Yeah, I love it.
So excited about that.
I love The Vanishing Half and I love Piranesi. I think they're both great. I wouldn't be surprised if, even though it's like 50-50 black and white authors, I think I would not be surprised if Piranesi won.
Okay. Okay. Let's put our bets on.
Yep. I'm putting my bet on Piranesi.
Okay. I'm going to put mine on The Vanishing Hearth.
Okay.
Yes. I'm torn between The Vanishing Hearth or Transcendent Kingdom. I'm going to go with Transcendent Kingdom. Fuck it. I'm going to put my money on Transcendent Kingdom.
Are we literally going to put money on it?
We'll put £1.
Okay. Okay.
That's your preferred bet, right?
Yeah, I love a £1 bet.
Okay, a £1 bet. Or no, you know what? Because no one has coins. Well, when we meet up, the first time we meet up after the prize has been announced, the loser will buy the first round.
Assuming that the other one has won.
Oh yeah, because of course the six. Oh.
we'll figure it out. We'll find a way to make this bet work. Okay, but on the record, I'm saying Piranesi. You're saying Transcendent Kingdom.
Yeah.
Okay. I have memorialized this for all of time. It is on the record. I will not edit this out. It is there.
This whole rambling madness will be kept in whole. Okay, good. Good to know. I will post on our Instagram at some point a picture to represent the shortlist. And please feel free to leave a comment and let us know who you are betting.
Yeah, so not necessarily which one you like the most, but what you think will win. That's all we want to know. We don't care what you like. We just want to know what you think is going to win.
Okay, good.
We'll have assign an emoji to each of them, and then people can just comment with their emoji.
Oh my god, I love that. Okay.
That's going to require some brain power to figure out what represents books we've never read.
I'm really confident that I can do that.
Okay, we could do the bicep one for how the one-armed sister sweeps her house. I got it.
Yeah, I've got ideas. Yep.
Got it. Yeah. Done. We will see you next time. I mean, shall we? We'll be back to Friday, right? I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even though we are here on a Monday, we will also be here on Friday. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.